Hello, this is the Angry GM, and this is the Angry GM's mostly monthly live chat for the month of February in the year of 2023, and huzzah and forsooth, I got through the opening without screwing it up, even though I said I was going to in the pre-show. This live chat was delayed a week, and I'm sorry about that, but I didn't delay it any further, even though the week still continued. So basically, the last 6 weeks, or actually rather, I guess the first 6 weeks of 2023 have been, in the words of Douglas Adams, one great big juju flop situation. Okay, it of course started with the great OGL crap show. Oh, before I go any further, I do need to mention, if you are listening live on the live chat text channel, Nitsua did post the Angry Bingo, and hopefully you have downloaded your Angry Bingo cards and are already bingoing away. If you succeed in bingoing, please yell bingo. Don't yell. I mean, you can yell bingo, but you're muted, so nobody will hear it. But go ahead and type bingo or something so that Nitsua will know you bingoed, and then Nitsua is going to send you a book. Again, this has nothing to do with me. This is entirely his doing. Just another one of the kindnesses he does for the Angry community, for which I am grateful, even though I am not eligible for the prize. Anyway, so it has been quite a couple of weeks, by which I mean like six, almost 7 weeks now. Yeah, the whole OGL crap show, which is what I'm now officially referring to it as in the Angry canon, did necessitate me changing things for my plans for the entire year, which completely threw everything off. And then further necessitated me writing an entire role-playing game system, which is what then consumed a lot of the month of February. So the first 3 weeks of the month of January were me shoring up my legal position to protect myself from an attack that never came, because Wizards of the Coast finally decided to say, JK, we weren't going to hurt anybody over anything anyway, which is a lie. Their plans have shifted. And, you know, if you are a content creator and you believe Wizards of the Coast is not still going to screw you over in the next 2 years, well, that's your problem, honestly. But anyway, so I came up with the brilliant plan of writing an entire role-playing game system and giving it away for free to my most loyal supporters, those of the frenemy tier or higher, as bonus content to replace the theme packs I couldn't write anymore, thanks to Wizards of the Coast. And when Wizards of the Coast backpedaled, I had already started talking to people about this amazing system that I was going to have built. And the support for it was overwhelmingly positive, especially because I'm a good salesman and cheerleader, especially for a product I hadn't actually started writing yet. But then it's really good to sell a product that you haven't started writing yet. Just ask what's his name from Hello Games. Or if we go back a few years, Peter Molyneux, you know. So anyway, that said, I did then take an entire weekend while I was vacationing in New York, because my parents surprised me and Allie with tickets to visit them and the rest of my family back in New York so that we could have a rather a sizable engagement. It wasn't sizable. It was just a bunch of people in a house. And I don't know why I throw adjectives on everything. It's the GMing thing, right? You have to throw adjectives on everything. Anyway, it was an engagement party. They threw us an engagement party to celebrate our engagement. So it was very, very nice. But it was a bit of an upheaval traveling out there. And during that time, I brought a little notebook and proceeded to completely design an entire role-playing game engine, sort of, which I then came back and decided to turn into a alpha play test document. And thanks to Caldrev, who would kindly posted a question in the Mostly Monthly Live Chat Q&A thread, which, by the way, does exist in case you want to ask a question tonight, though the questions that I already have are going to eat up most of the time, I'll tell you that. I will be talking more about this game later, which is called Slapdash. So anyway, the entire rest, or most of the rest of, or most of February thus far was spent cobbling together an alpha playtest, which we finally, I finally officially started it with my group last Wednesday, last Wednesday being the 15th, which was a reschedule of our normal game night, which forced me to reschedule this live chat. Because unfortunately, I'm sorry, but the alpha playtest was a bit more important. And then we would have been continuing it this week, but they promptly canceled the second session on me. So we'll be continuing next week. That's players for you. Anyway, so there's all of that. And so meanwhile, that has left me a bit far behind, and I've been dealing with, you know, the normal health and personal issues that I always seem to start the year with. Which is why articles all got clumped up into the last week of the month for the second month running, which I absolutely hate doing. But nonetheless, articles are coming. In fact, tomorrow there is an article coming. It is already finished and ready to come, about the, what did I call it? The declare, determine, describe cycle. And it's a good sign that I can't even remember my own terminology, even though it's the most obvious name I've ever given anything. And I actually think that's a pretty good one. And it will be followed shortly thereafter by, you know, how to use your dice for fun and profit or whatever. And the only thing is now this is then the whole Slapdash thing is nudging out the finalization of the tension dice rules again. So I don't know that they're going to hit next Tuesday or they're going to hit in the first month of or first week of March. They're either going to hit in a week or 2 weeks. I'll see what's happening over the weekend. It's going to be another long weekend of working. But anyway, so that's all the news about Angry Games that's fit for me to talk about. And I'm going to move on to a couple of other quick topics. Well, maybe quick topics, but they're fun topics. I'm going to talk about two other things that I really want to talk about. And then I'm just going to address the Q&A stuff as best I can, though I have a feeling that October Foundry is going to be a bit disappointed in the answer that they receive. Okay, so first of all, and this actually ties into Slapdash, which is the name of the system that I threw together in a weekend. So, you know, obviously there's a good reason for that. There's actually several reasons for the name now. There's a long, the story of Slapdash is a long and storied story. Yeah, that's redundant. Anyway. I asked this question in the Discord and then was foolish enough to take it to Twitter. And the question is it okay for players to read the monster manual? Okay, and the reason I ask this question is because of a thing that I'm doing in Slapdash, and I'm going to actually talk about some of the stuff that I'm doing in Slapdash. So one of the things that is in Slapdash is this. Anybody in the world can appeal to the gods for miracles, where miracles are basically divine spells, right? Anybody can drop to their knees and pray to Ares and say, Ares, if you will bless me and my allies, I will serve you or, you know, donate to your temple or blah, 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 whatever. And then there's a chance that Ares will actually answer. The only difference between a divine spellcaster and everybody else is that divine spellcasters get to know the rules. That is, they get some sense of what gods will actually give them what and what the probabilities are, and they have a much greater chance of being answered, at least the first time, because the more you appeal to the gods, the more likely they are to answer you. Though sometimes that answer is shut up and leave us alone, handle it yourselves. The heavens help those who help themselves. Have you not heard that phrase? Anyway, so this brought up, people raised the question of what happens with ongoing, you know, as players play the game, if somebody plays a cleric and they have been exposed now to the secret rules of being a cleric, then when they go on and play a fighter, can they not use that information, or can they just share that information with their fellow players when they're playing a cleric, and thus, you know, gradually knowledge of the secret rules diffuses throughout the whole player base, right? Over time, players learn the secret rules. And people ask that question, this is obviously a flaw in your plan, Angry. The idea of having secret information that only some players can have, that doesn't last forever. Eventually, the information diffuses. And I'm like, no shit, kids, I thought of that. In fact, that's kind of what I want. You know, that's the idea, okay? But then it came down to the idea of there is some examples of secret knowledge in D&D. Not that many, but there are a few. And one of them is, of course, the Monster Manual, which contains jealously guarded secrets about monster vulnerabilities and weaknesses. Some GMs make a giant-ass big deal about whether or not players know the monsters in the Monster Manual, and some GMs don't. Okay, and some GMs also, there was such a weird pattern of answers. Okay. I kind of lost the thread here. Okay, so here's the point. Is it okay for the players to read the Monster Manual? And obviously, this leans into that whole metagaming problem of like, well, if I throw a troll in there and the players know that the troll is resistant or, you know, vulnerable to fire, then they'll just use fire and trivialize the troll. And of course, you're all my followers and you know what I think of that bullshit, because that is such a stupid thing to say. But the bigger question remains, is it okay for the players to know what they're after? And some GMs think it is not okay. Some GMs would like the players to be exposed, you know, to have to discover the knowledge of the game world. Other GMs think it's totally fine and they're perfectly happy if their players have this knowledge. Then there's the GMs who stupidly say things like, yeah, it's okay if the players have the knowledge as long as they promise not to use it, which is metagaming and bad, which is completely moronic. That is a stupid thing to say. The belief that somebody can accurately play a character in a role-playing game as if they do not have knowledge that they, the player, do, then, you know, I lost the thread of what I was just saying there. I was trying to make a sarcastic remark, but it failed. Anyway, it is impossible for a player to portray accurately a character as if they don't possess knowledge that the player does have. Okay, it cannot be done. And if you believe it can't be done, you haven't thought through the problem, because it does create a crap ton of problems. But I don't want this to be a whole spiel on metagaming. Because then the other group of people was the GMs who say, yeah, I'm totally fine with it because I constantly change the monsters to screw with the player's knowledge. Okay? And that is the same as saying, no, it is not okay. It is only okay because I have the option to confound that knowledge. Yeah. But what I was not expecting, and, you know, this demands now attention. This became such a giant issue that there is going, like, my once a month bullshit article is gonna have to be spent on this crap and everything to do with secret knowledge. Because there's actually a great deal of benefit to there being secret discoverable knowledge in your game and in the larger game. I mean, one thing Dark Souls taught us all is that a community of players absolutely loves to share information between it, like discover information and then share it until it becomes widespread knowledge, so that eventually everybody knows how to get back to the undead asylum by climbing up to the nest and curling into a ball because somebody at some point discovered it, and then everybody else, you know, and then they passed it along and other people discovered it and somebody saw a YouTuber do it. And slowly but surely that diffuses through the entire player population. There's value in that, okay? And I'm actually, Ranish asked a very interesting question on almost exactly this topic. So I'm going to come back to it. But anyway, there is going to be a discussion of secret knowledge and its value in the game. But I'm going to say this. Number one, if you attempt to confound your players' knowledge of the game's world, of its lore, of creature vulnerabilities, of what spells and magic items exist, and all of that stuff, if you change your monsters so that they never know how to handle what, blah, 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 you are doing your players a great disservice. You're running an objectively worse game than the GMs who tell the players, use whatever you know, and I'm not gonna fuck with that. And that I'm not even gonna, like, change up monsters. I will say this, in fact. The GM who uses monsters from the monster manual as written the majority of the time in their game is actually providing their players a better experience than the GMs who are constantly creating new monsters. Likewise, GMs who reuse the same monsters over and over again, not, you know, within a reasonable degree, are also doing their players much better service than those who never use the same monster twice. Okay. The race question. I had this funny idea that I wanted to start inviting some, participatory feedbacky or participatory survey question discussion stuff that I could, you know, then talk about in the live chat, which is what I'm doing now. At some point, I think a month ago, just under a month ago, I put a question out only to my supporters. It was a poll, okay? And the question was inviting people to imagine that they are junior designers working at Goblin Press, and they have been asked to provide their opinions as to what playable non-human races, should appear in the upcoming new edition of the Labyrinths and Lizards Heroes Handbook. Okay? This question was actually very specifically worded, and I invited people to give their answers. Okay? And I really... I got a lot of questions about the question, specifically because of the way I phrased it, because I wasn't really interested when I, okay, so let me, I'm going to give you the whole question first. In case you missed it, this is the actual question. You are a junior member of the design and development team at Goblin Press, the company that produces the immensely popular tabletop fantasy adventure game, Labyrinths and Lizards. And it's new edition time. The senior designers have determined there's enough page space in the upcoming Labyrinths and Lizards Heroes Handbook to include 5 playable, non-human fantasy races. And they're trying to decide which races to include. Once they've pared the list down to 5, they will assign you 1 or more of the races to develop. Exciting, right? To help them decide which races to include, the senior design team has invited the entire design team, including you and your fellow junior team members, to share your opinions. You and everyone else on the team are handed 4 small slips of paper, 3 white and 1 red. On each of the white slips, you are invited to write down 1 non-human race you think should be included in the Hero's Handbook. Unfortunately, the slips of paper are small and the Sharpie markers they supplied are broad-lined, so you can't fit much more than a race's name on the slip. And there's a character limit to the number of letters you're allowed to type. On the red slip, you're invited to write down 1 race that you personally don't want to work on when it's time to decide who gets to write the details for what race. This isn't a veto. You can't stop a race from getting into the book. But if enough team members write the same race on the red slips, the senior designers may just drop the race from consideration altogether. Once you've filled out your slips of paper, you're to drop them in a little box. Assume your initials are included on the back so management knows you'd prefer not to work on what specific race, yada, yada, yada. How do you fill out your slips of paper? Now, I could have just asked, hey, what three races do you think belong in the player's handbook, and what one race would you rather didn't? But I can't do things the easy way because I frankly don't care about people's personal opinion about what races are good and what races are bad. Though for the most part, I knew lots of people would answer this question in exactly that way. They would just view this as an opportunity to say, these are the races I think belong in a fantasy adventure game, and these are the ones I don't. And as I scrolled down the list of the some 200 and something entries that I got, I could see a lot of entries that were basically like that. You know, it's just a list of these are the races that I think belong in the player's handbook. Though, looking more closely, so I did go through all the entries, believe it or not. I'm not like a data scientist and I didn't analyze it or anything. I'm not actually hiring people. But the most interesting question I got from people who asked about the question, apart from why did I ask it the way I did, and mainly the reason I asked it the way I did was just, I guess, for shits and giggles, really. But it was because I'm just not interested in the, hey, pick your favorites, okay? That's a boring question. I really wanted to see the patterns that would arise from the way people thought. But then someone asked me how I would answer the question. In fact, several people asked me, how would I answer the question? And in thinking about the question itself, I realized that if I was going to use this as a way to hire people, there was at least one thing that would pretty much guarantee that I would bring that person in for an interview, which I'm not, and I'm not going to. But first, some interesting results, okay? For all the disdain that people have toward the traditional fantasy races, and there is online a lot of disdain for elves and dwarves and halflings, the fact of the matter is 70% of the people who answered this thought dwarves belonged in the player's handbook, 60% of people who answered it thought elves belonged in there, and 30% thought halflings belonged in there. And 20%, a good one-fifth of all the entries, were dwarf, elf, halfling, or, you know, some permutation or combination of dwarf, elf, halfling as the three creatures to include. Okay. Now, there is selection bias, there is sample bias, yes and yes, because these are people who are my followers, but there are also people who were definitely using it to send a message. And that's, you know, like, okay, so there were a few asshole messages, which I want to call out. Okay, first of all, I explicitly asked people not to answer if you weren't going to take the question seriously. Because that's just a pain in the ass. Like, I don't want to, you know, don't treat this shit as a joke. I do, and I get that a lot. I'll put out a question looking for honest information because I'm interested in how people answer and how people think about the question. And there will always be a few asshole answers. There will always be a few people like, it's not a valid question because, or I wouldn't care because fantasy is the worst and I wouldn't even work on labyrinths and lizards. And it's like, fine, then don't answer the question, okay? Nobody gives a shit about your opinion. I'm looking for the opinions of the people who want to give the opinions that I'm interested in. So that sort of thing annoys me. And there were a few like, just humans, just humans, just humans, any other race. I got three entries where all three race choices were human, and then the leave out was anything else. And it's like, fine, thanks. Thanks for wasting my time, jerk. I realize I'm a little miffed about this, but it really does annoy me when you just try to put out an honest question and like, here's the question, and then people just refuse to engage with it. Like, you're just get out of my way. And there were a few other things too. There was someone who wrote half orc, quarter orc, one eighth orc, or something, three quarter orc, half orc, one quarter orc, as their three races. It's like, why did you even bother? Okay. There were some really interesting entries, though. First of all, like I said, people know the good fantasy races, or people know the traditional fantasy races, and most people they know they belong in fantasy. So despite the fact there's a lot of disdain for them, and there were people who wrote things like, who went really off the wall. I'm trying to look for some here, like, Minotaurs, hawk people, mice folk. That's very... Or Canid, Mystic, Chenjesu / Shard Mind. And then they will always... Then in the races, they don't want to write about these people, always put, like, elf. Like, a lot of people are just sick of elves. There's a lot of elf fatigue. There were about 30... so let's see. What is 30 divided by 206? You know, about 15% of people red-carded elves. They just don't want to work on them. And then almost a similar amount red-carded halflings. Nobody hates dwarves, though, which is cool. There was a time when everybody loved elves and nobody loved dwarves. And now we're coming back around to we love dwarves again and the elves can suck it for a while. And I'm cool with that. Okay. But there were some really interesting thought patterns that I could see. So one person said dwarves, reptilian, and changelings. Okay, and that is about as close to the answer, the kind of answer I would have given. Okay, another one is elf, cambion, werekin. And dwarves, sand people, Eloi. Okay, those to me are the people that I want to talk to. Zoot is asking how many people included tiefling. I would have to count. It's not super easy to just do these counts, honestly, because I don't know how to write a form for data analysis. I'll get a number. Here, let me write a note to myself. I'll get a number and post it. I didn't count everything. It was really more for idle interest than anything. So how many tieflings? I'll let you know. This is what would have drawn my attention. Okay. And this is the thought pattern, really, because you could tell the people who are engaging with the actual setup of the question. So let's say you really are a junior designer and you want to be a senior designer. You know, that's ultimately your goal, is you don't want to be developing other people's stuff all day. You want to have the say in the end. So you want to prove to the senior designers that you are someone worth, you know, trusting with work and promoting and all of that stuff. So how do you do that? Well, first of all, you have to demonstrate that you understand you are writing for the most popular fantasy adventure game in the world. And so to some extent, you are going to have to suck it up and accept the fantasy tropes, okay? So right off the bat, you are gonna have to include some elf or dwarf or halfling, a traditional race that must be included for a game to qualify as fantasy. If you don't do that, you are saying to the team, I don't understand the product I am writing for. Okay, I don't understand that I am writing a mass market fantasy adventure. Now, the thing is, you don't have to write elf, dwarf, and halfling, because the senior designers are smart enough to know those things have to be in there. So you don't have to waste all your choices on them. So your first choice, though, has to prove you know those things belong there, even though you know they're going to get in anyway. Okay? Your second choice is something that... It should be something that is fantasy-ish, right? Shows that you that you're willing to think a little outside the box, but that you still understand the broader fantasy genre. Okay, so that's where you add something that maybe isn't represented in previous editions, but that is represented in the fantasy literature. That's where you throw something like an ogre. you know, or a half giant or lizard folk or, you know, something like that. Something that just, you know, it's a little unusual. It would be a rare race, but it's not crazy rare. Maybe a monstrous race. You know, I mean, goblins and kobolds, they're all overdone, but maybe gnolls, you know, or something like that, you know, or minotaurs or whatever. Okay. Your third race is the one where you show that you have real creative chops, where you can come up with something that is new and unique. Okay. That's the one where you say, and somebody actually put this answer down, which surprised me because this was an answer I gave as an example of something that would wow me. But somebody put in like, you're a swarm of insects, right? Like you're an oogie boogie blob of insects, or like a Lamia from fourth edition, because Lamias in fourth edition were really awesome, you know, or... You're basically a floating sentient crystal or something like that. Something that is fantasy-ish that fits the fantasy genre, but is also very creative. Okay? So you do that and then you show, I understand my product and I understand the broader genre around my product, but I'm also really creative. Okay, that pattern of answers is the person that I would definitely want to talk to and say, hey, come into my office. You put some real thought into this and you know, I think we should talk about moving you up. Okay. But then the problem comes with what you red card. Because realistically, you don't want to red card anything. If you want to get promoted, you don't want to be the person who refuses to work on anything. You want to show the boss, I'm willing to work on literally anything, okay? If you're the sort of person like, well, I'm not going to work on humans, they're boring. Well, then you're not really a team player. I don't need you because everybody's got to put in some grunt work, especially the juniors, right? Nobody likes writing the humans, but, you know, if you're unwilling to do it, then it's like, well, you know, that's beneath me. You have an ego, okay? And if it's something really off the wall and bonkers, well, then it shows that, you know, you're not willing to try and embrace the craziness. The only safe answer to give for what you would red card would be your second race. So let's say you did say elf, minotaur, swarm of bees, right? You don't want to say elf, you don't want to red card elf. Okay, and you don't want to red card anything else because you basically don't want to refuse to work on anything. But you have to red card something. So you red card one of your own answers. That's the safest. But you can't red card your common answer because that shows that you're not willing to work on the boring stuff. And you can't red card your most creative answer because that shows that you can spit out ideas, but you don't think you can develop them. So you go for your middle of the road answer. It's like, so elf, minotaur, swarm of bees, and I don't want to work on minotaur. I'll happily work on the elf because I don't care about working on the boring stuff. I think I can do good with even that. And I will definitely work with the swarm of bees because, of course, that's my idea and I think I can build it out. And I won't refuse to work on anything else, but I got to be honest, I probably don't want to work on the minotaur. And that would be the answer. That pattern of answers would attract my attention. That said, there were a couple of other interesting people who I would also like to talk to. And these are people who set up, who didn't specify race names. Okay, like somebody said, spiritual race, technological race, magical race. And as much as I don't want a technological race, I like the fact that they are looking at these races as a chance to build out a theme in the world. Okay, somebody else said declining elders, unwavering clansmen, and primal magic touched. And those are such evocative, descriptive names that are also wholly thematic that once again, I would like to see that person and say, hey, you know, I like the way you're thinking about this in terms of building out different themes in the world. Let's talk. Elemental bloodline, dragon bloodline, animal bloodline. That's another really interesting one where, again, it just shows, okay, number one, that actually shows a really interesting pattern of thinking because the races are bloodlines now, right? And then this, and now we're going to divide them up by thematic bloodline. Then there's Fae-kin, Giant-kin, and Beast-folk, which once again, take your fantasy tropes and say, look, I know the fantasy thing. And we're going to make the races that are, like the extensions of those fantasy tropes. Anyway, it was just a really interesting question, and I had a lot of fun looking through the answers. So if this is the sort of thing that people might enjoy for future stuff, I'd love to put out like more polling questions and then use them as a jumping off point for discussion. So let me know in the comments after I post this. But now I'm going to move on to the Q&A, because there's a couple of things I absolutely definitely want to discuss. And one of them is Renisha's question, who posted it specifically because I saw him ask the question in another channel, and then asked him, hey, would you throw that at the live chat? Because I really want to talk about that. Okay. The question is this. The GM is supposed to tailor the difficulty to the players. I think that's a generally accepted axiom. However, if they do, is there value in being better at D&D? And this is a really, really, really interesting question, because there's a fundamental idea that's being missed in the question. Because of course, okay, it is true. Unless you're one of those old school, like hex crawl sandboxy types who says, no, you should throw dragons at first level players because they should be smart enough to run from the dragons. Or if they wander into a dungeon that you told them not to wander into, they deserve what they get. You know, that's bullshit. You are, as a GM in a modern game, supposed to tailor the challenge level to the players. That said, you are actually not supposed to do that, because there is a value in being better at D&D. And this is kind of what I was getting at with the whole secret knowledge thing, because one of the things that allows players to get better at any game is knowing more about the game. And this is something that D&D actually doesn't really value very highly, which is crazy, because all of the other games that are in the same genre as D&D, you know, you talk about your adventure games like Breath of the Wild, you talk about your RPGs, your action RPGs like Skyrim or Dark Souls, right? Or even your JRPGs with all the hidden shit and the like your Monster Hunters, where you have to be an expert in spreadsheets to figure out how to craft what equipment and max out your stats and all of that stuff. All of those games, to some extent, thrive on the player learning more about how to be good at the game and thus being able to play it better, okay? And which is especially important for a game you want people to either play a long time or play over and over, which is kind of what our tabletop role-playing game is, because you're expected to play it for, well, let's see, we've been expected to play 5th edition for 8 years now, right? 8 or 9 years, and we're expected to play 3rd edition for 8 years. AD&D 2nd edition was 12 years, right? So yeah, we're expected to play these games for a really long time. And over that time, you learn the game and you get good at it. Okay. So if the GM is constantly tailoring the difficulty to the players, how can you get good at it, right? Because the challenge is always going to be equal to you. Well, here's the thing. The GM is not supposed to tailor the difficulty to the players. Okay? There is nothing in the DM's guide that says tailor the difficulty to the players. The GM tailors the mechanical difficulty of the challenges to the characters. Okay? It's all about avatar strength versus the challenge in the game. Okay, it's, you know, the character's stats balanced against the stats of the things they're facing. Okay. And that does leave room for the players to get good at things. Because all else being equal, when player, you know, if the players run into an average challenge, if they are good at the game, it's easier for them. Okay? Which is why also the GM probably shouldn't screw with the difficulty based on the play, how the players handle the game. Okay? That is, you should kind of trust the CR numbers, and if you have a group of players, unless the players are getting bored, but, you know, I mean, that's a judgment call, right? But really, it's not about balancing the difficulty to the players, it's about balancing the challenge to the characters. It's about balancing the stats, okay? And then the player skill comes in, number one, either they can make short work of the same challenges that other groups would struggle with, or number two, they can face things that you, that they know are more powerful than they should be facing. Okay, when, you know, it's kind of the equivalent of doing that, you know, I'm at soul level one and I just beat the gargoyles, the bell gargoyles, right? That's the kind of experience of, well, I'm only fourth level and I beat and my party's fourth level and we killed a seventh level dragon. Like, that should be something that happens. And really, the players should know that too. Like, the GM, there should be some way for the GM to convey to them that, like, you just beat a seventh level dragon, you're only fourth level, you really kicked ass. And then they get a huge amount of experience and a huge amount of treasure for it, way more than they would get for anything else. And then they really feel like they won. So that stuff should be a possibility. Anyway, and this also plays into this whole discussion about secret knowledge that I'm going to have sometime in the future. But I do have to move on because I'm going to run out of time at this point. And I absolutely definitely want to get to Caldrev's question. Because Caldrev asked, out of curiosity, because I've never seen a product go through all of its development stages, once you have all of the alpha rules done for Slapdash, what happens that will make it ready for beta, if one will exist, and then what happens to make it customer ready? And this is an interesting question because I genuinely do not know the answer. I have not myself ever seen a tabletop role-playing game go through development. I have no idea, and I'm making this shit up as I go. But I will tell you what I'm doing currently, okay? The approach that I've chosen to take. And the approach I've chosen to take is based on a design concept called fail faster, okay? The idea is this. No matter how good you are at math, and no matter how smart you are at design, you have no idea how a game is actually going to play until you put it in front of people and actually play it. That is the only way to judge a game. There's no amount of math or logic or anything that will tell you if your design is good. You just have to put it in front of people. Which also, and that can lead to some counterintuitive things. Like, you could design something like, I never thought this would work, but man, everybody seems to enjoy it, so it's good for the game. Whatever. Okay, so the idea is, I wanted to get something in front of players as quickly as possible. So, I wrote the core rules, as basically as much as I knew. Like, there were things I had decided in my head, decided in my little notebook, over four days of brainstorming, and the initial inspiration for a die rolling mechanic that I said, you know, actually the whole thing started with that question, with a comment that I made in an article about, wouldn't it be neat if advantage was something only the GM could give, and that the only thing the rules could give you was fixed modifiers. And that was the inception for everything Slapdash. Okay, so I came up with the core rules. Essentially the equivalent of roll a d20, add an ability score, compare it to a DC. If you have advantage, roll the dice twice. If you have disadvantage, and take the higher. If you have disadvantage, roll the dice twice and take the lower. Okay, that's the core rule of D&D. Everything else hangs off of that. There's a few other things like initiative and resolving combat actions and whatever. Okay, but essentially that's it, right? That's the core engine. And I needed to get that much, my version of that, because it's not that, by the way. But I needed to get my version of that in front of players as quickly as possible, because I needed to know not that I could build, you know, not that I had built a great game, but that the core rule was fun enough to tinker with that it was worth building a game around, right? That's all I was looking for at this point. You know, the core rules couldn't fall apart. Like, nobody could say, I don't get this, or I hate this, or whatever, okay? So, and that's precisely what I did. After I built what I considered to be the minimal core rules that my system needed, you know, basically I have attribute checks, or I have basically die rolling. I have attribute tests, I have spell casting, appeal, invoking miracles, which praying to the gods, and then I have a combat engine. That's it. That's the entirety of Slapdash Alpha. The problem is, I have to get that in a playable state. And I don't even know what monsters are going to look like, and I don't even know what stats the player characters are going to have. I know some of them. You know, like in D&D, after you write the core resolution engine, you know you're going to have ability scores. You may not know what they're going to look like in the end, but you know you're going to have ability scores, right? And based on your die rolling engine, you have some sense of you know, what number those ability scores should be measured against. Like, you know, I'm rolling a d20, so the ability modifier should not be plus 50. Shit like that. Okay. Based solely on that, I took out some paper and drew a character sheet. I took out Microsoft Excel and drew a character sheet and put the stats on there I thought the game would need. And I tried to build a character that was something like what the characters would look like when I finished the game based on what I thought. Okay? Like, I literally tried to just infer what a finished character would look like based only on, you know, two chapters from the player's handbook. If you had only read the two chapters in the player's handbook that deal with, or the three chapters in the player's handbook that deal with spellcasting, the core rules, and the combat engine, infer an entire character from that. Okay? And the same with, like, the monster design, right? It's like, okay, now I need to guess what a monster will look like. Okay? And from that, I built a 2-3 session adventure. The reason I wanted to target 2-3 session is because, well, 2-3 sessions is a good amount of time to at least judge if, you know, like, the first session is just trying to figure shit out. Like, it's a mess. The first session's a mess. The second session is where people start getting comfortable and start experimenting. And the third session is where people actually are having a good, you know, are having a good or bad time. Okay? But the initial response to the first session is going to tell you a lot of what you want to know. If people are not getting it, okay, and they're miserable with it, then the core engine is kind of screwed up, okay? Because even though we're, because you always struggle to learn, there's always a learning curve. But if the possibilities inherent in the system do not overcome that learning curve and say, yeah, this is really tricky and I don't quite get it, but I think this is really worth it to learn, then probably your thing is a clunky, non-approachable mess, probably. Okay? But I will say this. I'm not going to go into too much detail because I'm only one session into the three-session test. And the players are in a floating, rickety city of shipwrecks all lashed together with rope bridges and stuff. And they have run down some bandits who robbed someone. And they have just boarded the bandits' moored ship. Is this the setting or your metaphor for this? That's hilarious. Okay. It is not an accident that the barely functional prototype of a game called Slapdash is first being played in a city that is basically a bunch of cobbled together, lashed together shipwrecks. Yeah, you know, that was not an accident. That was intentional. In fact, there is a neighborhood. See, it's not Waterworld, okay? Because Waterworld wasn't piratey. Like, they were fantasy. It was, everybody stop saying Waterworld, okay? That's offensive. My setting is much better than Waterworld. Though, actually, I kind of enjoyed Waterworld. Anyway, stop saying Waterworld, okay? It's like the town that Monkey Island 2 starts out in. Okay, anyway. But yes, there is even a neighborhood in the town called Ramshackle. Because I thought just calling the neighborhood Slapdash would have been a little too on the nose. But yes, it was not accidental. It was done on purpose. But anyway, so, you know, they did a little bit of investigating around the town. They fought with some bandits. It was a delightful mess. I had a lot of trouble running the game. not because it's hard to run, but just because, you know, it's like, it's a mess. It's barely functional and you can't let anyone see that. Right. But I was having a little bit of trouble managing things, but not because they were hard to manage, but just because, well, more than anything else, I was nervous as hell. Okay. I was terrified. But nonetheless, at the end, everybody had fun, and everybody even highlighted some moments that had come up during the game that made them feel really good about the game itself or about the possibilities in the system. So I actually feel really positive about how the alpha is going. I don't know what the next stage is because I am making this up as I go. Okay, at this point, I have a core system. And I will say also the system is totally not balanced either. Okay, I didn't even know what the game balance was going to look like. Nitsua, not trying to throw more work on your plate, but do you imagine a design blog coming out of this? No. If I try to do a design blog out of this, it will not get done. That is something I have learned. So, no. Especially because I have set myself a very aggressive time frame. I want to be releasing a beta. You know, like I want to be releasing an early access to Frenemy tier supporters sometime in the spring. Okay? Sometime in the spring, probably late spring, probably around May at this point. But there are still major decisions that have not even been made. Like, I don't know if the system has classes. I do know that there was at least a fighter, a wizard, a rogue, and a cleric in the playtest. So those archetypes will be playable, but I don't know if the system is going to have classes. I don't know what character generation will look like or anything like that. I'm not even sure what characters look like, but I do know they have 8 stats, 4 mental and 4 physical. And I do know that fighting spirit is a part of it. And I know it does have gridless combat, which actually worked surprisingly better than I thought. And no, it's not just range bands. Okay. Are range bands a part of it? A little bit. But there's also some other things, and basically, a lot of what is in Slapdash is shit that I have cobbled together from other systems. Basically a whole bunch of shit I have quickly slapped together. And it actually seems to be coming together okay. So I have a complicated relationship. Everybody has a complicated relationship with rage bands. What systems are big influences? The number one biggest influence is D&D. Because basically, at the end, like, Slapdash was invented out of spite. Okay, that's really what happened. It's like, I looked at Wizards of the Coast. Wizards of the Coast said, you can't make D&D content anymore. We're going to sue you. And I said, fine. You know what? I can make my own D&D with blackjack and hookers. And that was literally the first version of Slapdash was going to be, I'm just going to file the serial numbers off 5e and then, you know, just release that as bonus content so that I can just write bonus content for it. And I'm sneakily writing D&D bonus content without writing D&D bonus content. But then I had the inspiration of a completely different dice mechanic that would allow the GM to give out stackable advantage and stackable disadvantage without the system ever granting it. And then, so ultimately, I'm going to end with this because I think I have 5 minutes left unless my Metroid producer corrects me, but I think I have 5 minutes left. So I'm going to end with this. Yep, I just got the 5 minute warning. So I'm going to end with this piece of information, which is also going to be talked about in the article that is coming out tomorrow, along with hopefully the proofread aloud, if Rattercrash can get to it, because I didn't give him much lead time because I'm behind. But anyway, the system is predicated on the idea that the GM's job is to translate a player's actions, whatever they are, into game mechanics, and then resolve them using game mechanics, and then translate the resolution back into actual action in the game. Okay, that's the GM's job. Okay. And so Slapdash is essentially designed to give the GM I don't want to call it a language, but the language of the Slapdash mechanics is designed to facilitate the GM translating all sorts of different type of actions into game mechanics. But not in a way where it's just like, okay, and if the players do this, give them a +2, or if the player, you know, yada, yada, yada. Okay, that's bullshit. I mean, it's literally designed to be a language for the GM to translate actions into mechanics and then back. Okay, and thus, it is also designed to keep as many of the mechanics away from the players as possible, even though you can't keep them all away from the players. Okay, this is something that I will also discuss tomorrow in tomorrow's article, because I generally advise that that's how GM should run everything. And I will be telling you exactly how to do that and to build. No, Starborn Hero is trying to rephrase my words into worse words. It translates declaration of actions into actions. No, it translates actions into game mechanics. And then game mechanics back into game events. I said it right. There's no reason to rephrase what I said unless you're going to do it better. The player shouldn't touch the game mechanics. Game terms should not cross the player's lips ever. Yeah, Prosel is saying don't distract him. He's been told to be strict on the timer. But that is it. I'm going to end on that note. I know I was a little unfocused and a little bit crazy. No, Queasel's job is to steal my ideas and claim them as her own. In fact, I actually have a bone to pick with Queasel because she keeps taking credit for my ideas. Now I notice that she has basically turned her druids into invokers of the primal spirits. And is claiming that she came up with that idea herself instead of ripped it off from me. Anywho. So thanks for that, Queasel. I got my eye on you, I know. Anyway. So with that said, I know tonight was a little unfocused and it was a little bit rambly. And I'm sorry about that. Like I said, I've been very distracted and have not been feeling very, very well. But nonetheless, it was a really good time. It was nice to get back behind the microphone. And I really appreciate Ranish Kaldrev for posting those questions as I asked. I really wish I had gotten to the other questions, but I just didn't have the time tonight. Yeah, Nitsua is trying to bait me into saying something, but I'm doing my sign-off, so no, and you don't get to win. If you win, what happens? Do you just keep a book to yourself and show everyone a picture of you reading it? Like, ha ha, I won the book. None of you get it. Oh, you buy yourself a new one. Okay. If nobody wins, you should buy me a book. No, don't do that. That was a joke. Do not send me a book. Do not send me gifts. Your support is more than appreciated. And that goes for everyone, since I have to now turn this into a sign off thing. So thank you, everybody, for your patience with everything in the last month. It has been quite a roller coaster. And I didn't even mention the fact that while designing Slapdash actually only took about 4 days, the actually writing up the rules took way longer than it should have given the word count, because I can crank out 4,000 to 5,000 words in 4 hours when I have to. But not if I'm writing a rule manual, apparently. So anyway, thank you for everything. Thank you for the support. Thank you for the encouragement. Thank you for the patience. And you know, articles coming. I got 3 articles to crank out before the end of February, which is basically a week. One of which is hitting tomorrow. One will hit on Friday or Saturday. The next one will definitely hit on Tuesday, but I don't know what it's going to be. And it might be me just bitching about monster manuals and secret knowledge and putting off tension dice another week. I really do want to make that a polished one. So I want to make sure it has the time that it needs. The problem is writing, you know, what you know. The problem is everything I already said. Anyway, I'm done. Good night.